Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Hourglass of Isabella. I'm here with the marvellous Michael Corvus.
Hello, it's a pleasure to be here as always.
And tonight we're going to be discussing Downton Abbey.
Yes, we are. Having just completed all...
Everything.
All this, well, other than the movie that's not out.
Yeah, there is another movie out.
Yeah.
2019, really? They did Downton Abbey. Yeah.
I did not know that.
Oh yeah, it's all about them prepping for the royal family coming. But let's roll into this podcast real quick. So this show came out. It's some of you are probably like, why are you guys talking about Downton Abbey? This show came out in 2010. I guess it's quite a while, but it lasted a very long time. It had multiple series, multiple seasons rather, and it did very well. People really fell in love with the writing.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when it first came out, because a lot of people came to me specifically and they were like, oh, you're British, you have a background in aristocracy, you'll love this. And I will give the spoiler warning here, guys. I'm going to talk a little bit about my background within this, because I think it's the perfect episode to do it in. It's all out there anyway, it doesn't really matter anymore. It's a perfect episode to encapsulate everything within, I feel.
And here, so, here.
Oh yeah, here. Cheers to that. You've got your gimlet. I've got
Indeed.
My champagne. Let's spill all the tea. Or alcohol, as the case may be. It's funny. But, yeah, this show came out. Most people were like, yeah, you should watch this. This is right up your alley. You're British. You're aristocracy. You'll love this. And I hated it. I'm not going to lie. It's not that I hated the show, per se. Because I didn't give the show a chance. It's more I hated the notion of it because I watched one episode and I was like, oh, yeah, this is a little too close to home. Like, this is a little bit too much. Like the environment in which I grew up in, which has positives and negatives, right? And for me, it was just like, even though this show is set in the 20s, obviously, and I grew up in the 90s, there's still a lot of that kind of leftover dying aristocracy stuff going on in the UK that still does exist to some extent. That's a fact. And that society is still very much there. And so I thought, well, I can't, you know. And I didn't. I avoided this show for many, 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 many years.
At least 12.
At least 12. Yeah. At least 12, obviously, yeah. And then I decided to give another chance. And I will say that chance came about because of the Gilded Age, which is Julian Fellowes. Julian Fellowes is the chap who did Downton Abbey.
Right.
And he more recently has co-written The Gilded Age, which is set in the late 1880s in New York. And for me, it's like the bustle gowns, and that's way more like in my era. I love that concept of a romance of the bustle gowns. Like, I love Victorian period dramas. So I watched that and loved it. And I thought, well, you know what? I'll revisit Downton Abbey. In fact, a friend of ours, Ali, if she's listening to us, she was actually watching it around the same time. And I was like, oh, you should check out Gilded Age. So then you and I went back and we revisited Downton Abbey, didn't we?
Yes,
we didn't just revisit it.
Yes, we
watched
powered
the whole
through all the seasons they had. We just finished up the last season, a week ago?
A week ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, like you were saying, there's a movie coming out.
There is.
It's coming out in a few months from now, in fact. So that's exciting, and we'll possibly do another podcast after that. But I thought it might be fun not just to discuss the series, but actually to discuss the real life Downton Abbey. Is it real? Are the characters real? What's the backstory? You know, that kind of thing.
Mm.
I thought it might be really fun. So, as it turns out, Julian Fellowes wanted it to be as realistic as possible. And by that I mean, Downton Abbey itself is a fictional place in terms of concept, but in reality as a real building. That building is a real building, and that is Highclere Castle, which was built in 1679, I believe. Hopefully I got that right. And has been the seat of the Carnarvon family for over 300 years. Mm. And that includes the current Lord and Lady of Carnarvon. And they still actually live there and reside there. In fact, my parents have visited there.
It's a beautiful residence.
Highclere Castle is a gorgeous, I mean, absolutely beautiful residence. And they do allow guests to visit it in the summer if you're ever interested in going there. In fact, the current, because they're actually the Count and, well, okay, so let me correct myself, because let me get this right, because this is hard. This is like some British aristocracy stuff. Let me get this right and try and explain it for everyone listening. So you might hear, like, Lord and Lady Carnarvon, and Lord and Lady is a title, right?
Yes.
The Lady so-and-so, the Lord so-and-so. In reality, she is the Countess of Carnarvon. She's the eighth. Okay, and he is the Earl of Carnarvon, the eighth. So it's Earl and Countess, just so you know the difference there. And then you may say, well, why is there the, like, her website, she has a website, she talks about all the filming and stuff, and I believe it's actually under ladycarnarvon.com. And then you may ask, well, why is that? Is it Lady or is it Countess? Is it Lord or is it Earl? And it turns out, if you're an Earl, you can always call yourself a Lord. Mm-hmm. Or in the example I'll tell you, my parents, like, let's say that my mother is Baroness. She doesn't particularly like Baroness or the way it sounds. I mean, Baroness kind of sounds like an old title. It doesn't have that nice ring to it. So she prefers, always has preferred, to be addressed by Lady.
Well, it's an honorific, right?
It's an honorific. So the lady and lord is like almost, I think, especially in this case, for more... So don't, they're still all titles, but there's just different things for different areas. Does that make sense? Did any of that make any sense to anyone? It's hard to explain.
Well, I'm a visual learner, so I mean, I need a flow chart for everything to
make it's so perfect true. Sense. It so is. Yeah, so Highclere, I was right, 1679, the Downton Abbey building, Highclere Castle, was built in. And it was a grade one listed country house. In fact,
well, what does grade one mean?
Okay, so here's the difference. So you don't have that in America, do you? You must have something similar. So help me out. So we have like grade one, grade two, and it depends upon the age that it was built. So let's say my house that I grew up in was built in the 1400s, and technically it should have been a grade two listed building. And in fact, I actually had a whole charge of it listed. But it's listed basically, this is a property of historical value and significance. It basically impedes you, which is a good thing, it impedes you from being able to demolish it entirely. And even if you do renovations, they have to be done so thoughtfully in regard to the character and history of the property. So you can't just go bulldozing around.
So I can go so grade in one, and do like Day-Glow yellow or like the my design for my Trapper Keeper from 1985.
No, that wouldn't fly at Highclere Castle.
None of that. Okay.
And that's a good grade one. So what is the equivalent in America? You must have something, a property of historical value where you're like, you can't mess with this so much. And it's historical value to the country. It's a national treasure. How about that? You must have those.
We do. I'm not sure the exact apples-to-apples comparison between the two, but a lot of those things are broken down not only on a national level, but a regional level, and a lot of them are private concerns that will go and save, like, different historical societies.
Yes.
Things of that nature. I think you, in from your country, it's organized on a national level at a minimum. Yes. And it's probably standardized across the board. So
yeah, it's very standard. You can get a grade two on as anywhere in the country. But so going back to this, the current Earl, the eighth Earl of Carnarvon, his name is actually George Herbert, whereas the current Countess, her name is Fiona, by the way, if you were wondering, listening to this. And again, as I said, they still live there. But what's really interesting. So his name is George, right? And he's the eighth Earl. Let me ask you this, and this will be great for listeners involved listening here. Have you ever heard of the name Carnarvon before? Does that ring a bell to you? Beyond Downton Abbey. Ever? Does this ring any bell to you?
It does, but I can't quite place it.
Mm. So it's before Downton Abbey. It's one other very famous Earl of Carnarvon. That he was the fifth Earl of Carnarvon. So, do you know about Tutankhamun?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's
Lord Carnarvon and Howard Carter. So, he was also called George. So he was George Edward Stanhope, more like Herbert, and he was the fifth Earl of Carnarvon, born in 1866 at Highclere Castle, and he died in Cairo in 1923, right around the kind of time that this whole story is set, ironically. Do you know why?
What Lord story? Carnarvon Downton died? Abbey?
Downton Abbey.
Yeah. Oh, that thing we're talking about?
Yeah. So why... Yeah, this will all come back in. Do you know why Lord Carnarvon died?
Why is that?
Some people believe he was cursed because of Tutankhamun. when he opened, he actually died in Cairo. They actually believed there was a curse on the tomb, and a bunch of people died as a result of it, so they all put it together in that way that people do. But in reality, he actually had a mosquito bite, which, when he was shaving, became infected.
Hmm.
Yeah, and he ended up dying as a result of that, unfortunately. But he was very famous because of that. So if you're ever into Egyptology, which was very popular during the 1920s. Anyway, it was a revival because of Lord Carnarvon. And Carnarvon was, you know, their seat was Highclere Castle. So while Julian Fellowes wasn't directly, the whole family in Downton Abbey is not real, at the same time, he's kind of taking on real aspects of the time and how the aristocracy was, which I appreciate a great deal. I really, really do. So let me ask you this. So Julian Fellowes, also, to tie back into Downton Abbey, he was actually born in Cairo. Did you know that?
I did not.
Yeah, so he already had probably a lot of knowledge and learning of this stuff, and he went on to, you know, creating Downton Abbey, which it may be even was meant to be within that. I think it's amazing. Do you have a favourite Downton Abbey episode? I know, but it's hard to pick.
Yeah,
so
hard,
many. How would you even pin one up?
How would you pin one up? I mean, there's always a. I don't want to say formulaic or anything, but there's almost always, like, you can always tell those episodes where it's like, oh wow, this is the conclusion of this little mm-hmm. story arc for these group of people, and you're sitting there waiting with bated breath to see if. You know, Bates is going to be getting out of prison or not.
Yes. How many times did that poor guy go through shit in the show? That poor guy. Jesus Christ.
Every time you've got an episode where that guy's like, oh, good, man, thank God, Bates is in
the. Or he gets with Anna and he's happy, and then it's like, oh, no, now you're going to jail.
You know, it's like, oh, now his ex-wife comes up and is blackmailing him. You know, it's like, man, I like Bates. He's probably one of my favorite characters, the Stoic. Him and Carson.
I like Carson.
Yeah.
Can we just agree, Carson is a great butler?
I think he's probably the gold standard butlers that a lot of people are
looking
aspiring
for, which we
to.
Do as so we actually still do have butler schools in the UK.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and there's been a revival on that too, because especially China. Because of the popularity of Downton Abbey and other shows, there's a huge demand for proper English butlers. Mm-hmm. And I would say that Carson is probably the gold standard of what they're looking for.
So on that note, we were talking about the current Lady of Carnarvon, right?
Yeah.
Do you know she's even written on her blog about her own personal Mrs. Patmore? So who's Mrs. Patmore, first of all?
Oh, Mrs. Patmore is the cook, you know?
Yeah, Mrs. Patmore is the cook.
Yeah. She's the
disgruntled kind of, at times kind of cook.
Disgruntled, but sweet. Yeah, the disgruntled cook with a heart of gold. It's the one that you don't mind getting boxed about the ears. Not that she ever did, but emotionally boxed about the ears. But, you know, she'd put on a good feast, and she'd be there to take care of you. So it's kind of like the drunken, abusive aunt you never had.
So she'd write about the castle's own Mrs. Patmore, which actually has Chef Poole. And so you can find, she actually has her own blog, which is under ladycarnarvon.com. I looked at it, actually. It's very interesting. She's also published multiple books about the history and the modern-day events, including the filming that takes place there at Highclere Castle. Mm-hmm. It's actually pretty cool. I did a bit of research on it earlier, and I had fun kind of going down the rabbit hole of that, you know, going back to the real side of it, because I like, versus just the TV show, exploring the real side of it. I think it's really interesting that, you know, you've got they're currently the eighth Earl, you know, the eighth Earl there, and on my side, my godfather was the eighth Earl of Onslow, and he also had a seat. A seat is like a place that your family kind of lives in. They've done that for 300 years at Highclere Castle, and my godfather was the Earl of Onslow. The late Earl of Onslow, Michael Onslow, and they actually had a seat at Clandon House in Clandon Park, which was just as beautiful as Highclere Castle. I grew up, I'd run around this place, it was so beautiful, and unfortunately it actually suffered a fire. It was a national loss. There was a bunch of really important artifacts in the building, which unfortunately were lost during that fire. Which was actually, in my opinion, a tragedy for the UK and just a loss of history there. But it was a beautiful building. And so it was really kind of cool to kind of get over my weirdness about the whole thing of growing up and watch this and kind of like actually get into Downton Abbey and follow these characters and actually sympathize with that notion of dying aristocracy. But
right, because
it's not
we see in the story arc as it's going by, they start at a certain point, which is right about the sinking of the Titanic.
Yes, it starts. Right? But when it starts is literally when the news of the Titanic comes out. Because
which
I believe,
was what year? 1914?
1914,
yeah. And then it goes into the Great War years, otherwise known as World War One.
Yes, and the Battle of Britain, that kind of
right.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't call it the World War One originally because it was just called
the Great War.
Yeah,
I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, well, it was because World War Two hadn't happened yet. So
yeah.
it was kind of retconned, you know, retroactive continuity. So now we called it World War One, you know, after World War Two. But it carries through that whole time period. But as this
let me get this right, because I like to correct myself when I'm wrong about something on a podcast. Not 1914. The RMS Titanic sank on April 14th, 1912. So that's the first episode. That's the marking point. I knew I was wrong there. It's the marking point of like when it starts. It's when the news arrives at the estate.
Right, yeah. It's not until 1914 is probably the next season when they start getting into the war years.
And I will say for this show, and I'd be interested to see with Gilded Age if it goes the same way. And if you haven't watched it, by the way, I would highly suggest Gilded Age.
I would say this podcast is pretty much for people that have seen it.
For people who have seen Downton Abbey, but if you've not seen Gilded Age, if you love Downton Abbey, you're going to really love Gilded Age. And it takes a hot second to get into it. Like, there are some people on the groups I'm in on Facebook and social media, and they say, well, it's not as good, and I'm not into this yet. I'm like, give it time. Like, of any TV show, make sure you check out at least 3-4 episodes before you make that rash decision, because I did that with Downton Abbey early on, and I kind of wish, looking back, I hadn't. But I'm glad that you and I got the time to explore it.
Yes, absolutely. Well, so it's two different eras, too. So around the time that Gilded Age is happening, it's
the height of the aristocracy in some ways.
Well, and even
Industrial Revolution.
Right, it takes the railroad barons, things of that nature. Everything is like booming and bustling. It's on the way up. But Downton Abbey is... You know, there's a lot of down end. There's so many people that have to sell off their properties. After the war years, things really changed. Oh,
do you think that we're living in a down age right now in our society? I mean, involving the war,
some things, yes,
Ukraine,
some things,
thing,
no.
And Russia. I mean, I wonder about it sometimes. Like, we're living through some historical things.
I think we're moving from a kind of a perfunctory utilitarian era into something that's going to give way to something more along the lines of a renaissance.
I hope so. Yeah. I really do. It would be nice to think, but we've all gone through this pandemic, and now this terrible for Ukraine is terrible, you know, and we want to get through this and kind of go back to a time where we have that artistic, like a renaissance, like saying, the artistic ability to thrive and be creative and go back to trying to be happy for a second and economically successful and all of these things that we so desperately want as human beings. It's easy to talk about, very difficult to put into practice on the other side of that. But I did think watching some of Downton Abbey, especially during the war stuff, sometimes the show was hard to stomach. There were scenes that were difficult.
Characters you like, it's like, oh,
just dropping dead.
Everything's going great for them, and it's like, boom, Spanish flu, you're done. It's like, what? I didn't see that coming.
I'm glad they covered the Spanish influenza, because that was a pandemic of its time, so that was relatable for what we're going through now, in a way. I thought it was good.
Can we just talk a second about whatever happened to Patrick Gordon on that show?
It didn't tell me.
Remember, he was the guy that showed up that was...
Oh, yeah. Can we... What was the story there?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, okay. I know who you're talking about. Okay, for people who don't know.
The very first
Trevor,
episode...
he played Trevor... Who's the actor versus the thing? Trevor White.
Yeah, no. Patrick Gordon was the character. Trevor White was the actor.
Okay, Trevor White is the actor of the character Patrick Gordon, who's this guy who shows up. And for those who don't... Have you ever heard of a... story of Anastasia.
Right, yeah.
The Russian, you know, princess of Tsar who people believed was alive. There was a girl who claimed, she's like, I am Anastasia. I am her. And people actually believed her for a hot second.
Yeah.
Even though in reality, we now know we found the bones, it was not. She was an impersonator who actually had some mental health stuff going on and whatnot. This is the same story with this character where he shows up.
Because at the beginning, the beginning of the show...
He's the guy who was on the Titanic.
Right, the guy on the Titanic who was supposed to have been the heir to Robert Crawley.
Yes.
Who's going to inherit Downton Abbey. And he goes down on the Titanic and... Then that
it's an Anastasia story.
Yeah, it pretty much starts everyone trying to find a whole other heir for this. And then they're done to the warriors. This guy shows up.
And he's like, I am the heir.
Yeah, I'm this guy. Oh, yeah, sure, the Titanic sunk.
Edith, one of the daughters, actually believes him.
Right.
She believes him.
Well, I mean, they picked me up. They took me to Canada. That's why I lived in Canada for 2 years.
My memory loss.
That's why I don't have an English accent any longer. And I'm burned up. And there's no record of my fingerprints.
It's important
to know.
But you
need to trust me.
Yeah, his face was all scarred and beyond. He was very Phantom of the Opera. He had a big mouth, very, very scarred up. And he's like, you don't remember me? And it was kind of sad, but they realized, obviously, at the end he wasn't the guy. But they never did any follow-up of asking him to leave or confronting him about it or anything. He was just done.
That's what I'm saying. Okay, so...
never mind. Who's this guy? Never mind.
A non-diegetic discussion. Okay, so outside of the actual... actions of the show. I'm wondering, whatever, if he was just in there for like 3 episodes and then just like gone. And I was like, whatever happened to that guy?
I don't know, it's 3 episodes, maybe like 2, maybe 1. I had to go back and look at that.
He was like, I'm this guy. And then it ended up being like, you don't believe me, do you? Then I'm going to go away. And then I was just like,
Can I tell you two of my favorite plot lines in this whole Downton Abbey? One is Edith, because let's be real. This is, again, spoilers. If you've not seen this, turn this off now, because we're going to talk about everything here for Downton Abbey. So if you, before this, it doesn't cover too many spoilers, so now's the time. But Edith's kind of a bitch, first of all, to her sister Mary, who's the one who set the heiress kind of deal. She's like the younger sister, whereas 3 sisters, her sibling as well, but she's like kind of... this just terrible person. Like, she, to the point where she literally...
she did a terrible thing.
She does some cancel culture shit. She's like, I'm going to write to the embassy and reveal all of your secrets because you had sex.
Well, the one big secret.
Secret you've got. But basically tried to decimate and ruin your life as a sister whom I meant to love. And so you kind of start out hating this character. You're like, oh, this girl's terrible. How could she do this to her sister? This is like really awful behavior. And then as you watch it and you grow, she... is going to get married. She gets jilted at the altar. She's going to get married to this older guy, and she decides, I love this guy, I'm going to do this. Dad's like, fine, they get there. And he's like, I can't do this. Right, literally, while she's in the wedding dress at the altar, he's like, sorry, goodbye. And she gets jilted. And he runs off. He runs off. And you're like, well, she kind of deserved it, but at the same time, this is terrible, and you start to actually feel bad for him.
Right.
So when she finally got married...
And then there was another guy that fell in love. The editor. He moves to Germany. He's married to somebody...
He got killed by...
Yeah, okay, so
early
he,
Nazis.
Yeah, yeah, the brown shirts.
Brown shirts, right.
He's married. There's a whole little subplot there. She finds out he's married. He's like, well, I was going to tell you, I'm married, but she's in an insane asylum.
And she gets pregnant. She gets pregnant.
Right, yeah. At the time, you couldn't just divorce somebody because they were mentally infirmed. So the whole reason why he moves to Germany is because they have more lax laws.
Yeah.
So he's over there for all of like a week,
and
has a run-in with
missing.
These brown shirts, and
you
then is missing for
him.
Two seasons.
Yeah,
and then you finally find
dead.
Out that it's like, oh yeah, he
died. By the way,
done. Yeah,
he's done. And we kept thinking he was going to be alive. And of course, she was pregnant. She had a child. She had to hide the child away because she didn't want anyone to know. Because it was back then. Today, it wouldn't be a big deal. But back then, if you had a child out of wedlock, it was the end of your life. Like, it was no jokes. The fact they covered that so coolly. At some point, it wasn't cool. They'd be at a public party, like, let's talk about the kid you have secretly. And I'd be like, no, don't be discussing that now.
why are you doing that with an earshot of, right.
But when she finally did get married, can I just tell you that?
Yeah.
I was just like, even her and Mary have this scene. They're like, we know we haven't been the best of sisters because they both fucked each other over. Mary was terrible. Oh, Mary was like, and by the way, do you know that she has a secret daughter to the new guy? And he was like,
I couldn't imagine you wouldn't have told him. Yeah. Ready to,
and he was like, what? And she was like, no. It was awful.
Yeah.
Awful stuff.
So there's all kinds of back and forth stuff with this in this series. And I enjoyed it. I mean, look, would I have preferred more, sci-fi, lasers, car crashes, maybe there some was robots.
There was plenty of car crashes. Well,
yeah,
no.
there was at least painful. Two. Yeah, I know. Painful. Oh, sorry, Matthew. and also the vampire.
Yeah, that's okay. So it's
there's a vampire in Downton Abbey.
Matthew.
Matthew was the name of her. Matthew Good is the name of the actor.
Yes.
Right.
But he's the actor from Discovery of Witches. And it's funny, in Discovery of Witches, he's called Matthew.
Right.
So he literally has the Downton same Abbey, name.
He was Henry Talbot.
Yes, but it's the same actor. So here's what's crazy.
He doesn't die. It was the character Matthew that died in Downton Abbey.
Yeah, that's what when you start talking about the vampire. Yeah. So let's just cut this and switch it over. So here's the deal. Ending that discussion over there. So in Downton Abbey, there is this chap who is a suitor, mm-hmm. a courting Mary, who's the potential heiress, you know, the fortune. Right. Mm-hmm. And his name is, he's Henry, right?
Henry Talbot.
Okay, and he's played by Matthew Good, who also is in A Discovery of Witches. And in Discovery of Witches, his name is Matthew. But his point, they look identical in show, because obviously it's the same actor, but they don't change his look-up. In fact, I believe he almost got hired because of his role in Downton Abbey is my bet, because it came later. That's my theory.
Sounds the same, too.
Don't know his fact. No, it's the same voice, looks the same. Could you almost say be the same character? I have a theory. Mm-hmm. Guys, I don't think this is a theory that's ever been put out on the internet before, but hear me out. I believe with Discovery of Witches, the character of Matthew is actually canon to Downton Abbey, and they're actually meant to be the same person because Matthew was turned as a vampire hundreds of years ago. Okay, so he actually would have been alive in the 1920s. He even had a previous love of his life who died and everything. And so could it be that whole backstory is like a previous life of his where he was in love with Mary? And the whole time he's like, if you actually watch Downton Abbey, because he is a race car driver, he doesn't die. She's all worried he's going to die. His friend dies. And he's like, I've got to, no, my friend's dead. And he's like, no. And he's trying to grab him out of a fire. And she's like, no, stop. It's okay. And he's like, no, I've got to tell you something. He's like, she's like, Mary's like, no, it's okay. You don't have to tell me. And he's like, no, I've really got to tell you something. And the whole time I'm looking at TV, I'm like, he's a vampire. He's a vampire. I've seen Discovery of Witches. He's trying to tell you he's a vampire.
You should have let me crawl into the fire because I would have been fine. And I could have saved my friend. Yeah.
You know, something to that effect.
And he's sitting there on the racetrack and it's like everyone
I ever love has died. And right. it's just like that whole thing of...
I think it's a crossover.
It's a crossover.
It's a crossover the world didn't know it needed.
Yeah, exactly. Does. So if you've... All I ask you, at some point we should do a podcast for Discovery Witches. But if you've seen Downton Abbey and you love it, you love that character, please watch Discovery of Witches and at least tell me if you believe there's some world in which that could be canon, because I really enjoyed that. It wasn't even like he was doing a different acting style. The two characters are the same.
Vocal, absolutely.
Hair, outfit, everything. Intelligent, perfect. Handsome.
Stoic, charged.
Charismatic.
Dominant.
Yeah. Lovely. Oh my God, with that point, we're at 28 minutes.
Almost 28 reached, minutes?
We've almost reached the end of the
podcast. All right, well, we got to run through quickly for in the next minute and a half of the other 47 characters of Downton Abbey. Actually, maybe another time.
Yeah, here's what we'll do. How about this? When we watch the movie, would you like to do... Because what I'm going to call this one, because we discussed so much the real-life aspects of it, mm-hmm. I might call this for real Downton Abbey. Like, do you want to know the backstory of the whole thing? This is it. And then when the movie comes out, we can do Downton Abbey Part 2 and discuss each of the characters, because God, do I have a lot to say about Thomas, that piece of shit I also love.
Barrow?
That I love. Barrow? You said that just like him. That was great.
The character you love to hate and hate to love.
He got out of his own fucking podcast.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I hate him and I love him and I can't figure it out. And so that's what for certain thing. And I also very much want to talk about Daisy, because I do like her character as well. there's a lot of very cool character, and it's obviously more of a discussion than 30 minutes and we have time for in here, which is a good thing, not a bad thing. But if you enjoyed this, please feel free to subscribe, check out the podcast. We're on Spotify, Apple, all of the places that you can find podcasts realistically, and of course Anchor. And we will be doing more podcasts in the future. So without further ado, good night.
Good night.
And sleep tight.